This is The Sporkful.
This is The Sporkful, where sacred cows get grilled. I'm Dan Pashman, and we're about to challenge your assumptions about consumption and drop a sporkful of knowledge on you. Because we're obsessively compulsive about eating more awesomely, and because if history has taught us anything, it's that the hosts of food shows need a lot of catchphrases.
All right, I gotta jump in here. Right now, you're listening to this, you're probably having one of two reactions. Most of you are probably like, wait, is this The Sporkful? It kind of sounds like The Sporkful, but not really exactly. Then there's a small group of you that are feeling all warm and fuzzy because you know this is how The Sporkful used to sound. This is old school, 2010. Yeah, that's right. This show's been around since way before cereal, okay, people? And there are hundreds of classic Sporkfuls in my digital deep freezer, not publicly available. But right now, I'm going to make three choice cuts available to you only for this month as part of what we're calling Podcast Appreciation Month. We're asking you to support The Sporkful so we can make more of the shows that you love. The largest share of our funding comes from you. You donate any amount, and the three secret shows are yours. One of them features comedian Marc Maron. Not the episode from last year that you might have heard. This is a different one, where I get him to eat some raw cookie dough.
Try that. What do you think?
That's awful. Like, I can taste like this. I'm probably going to get sick from that.
You may.
What kind of food show is this?
I really want you to hear these episodes. So please, get on it before it's too late. Go to sporkful.com/donate and give now. Or send a text right now while you're listening. Text SPORK to 69866. Thanks. Now here's the show.
I sort of went in obesity beyond where the last couple of generations of my family had gone. But yes, in general, weight has been a problem throughout my family. And it continues to be because both my children weigh more than they should.
This is Nikki. She's a Sporkful listener in Baltimore. And 8 years ago, she had weight loss surgery. Today on the show, we're going to hear about how it changed her and her family. And she'll explain why the hardest part of all of it wasn't actually going through surgery. It wasn't even losing the weight. It was something else.
I didn't realize how mentally dependent I was on food. And so my inability to eat had a really, really traumatic psychological effect on me.
Plus, I'll answer the question that Nikki originally wrote in with. She makes lasagna with zucchini instead of pasta because in the wake of her surgery, she can't eat carbs. Her boyfriend has an issue with that.
He does not feel like zucchini constitutes a noodle, and therefore maybe it isn't really lasagna. So I'd like to talk about that and get to the bottom of what lasagna really is.
We'll discuss coming up. Stick around. From WNYC Studios, this is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman. Each week on our show, we obsess about food to learn more about people. Nikki says before she had her surgery, she ate a lot of restaurant food. She had Chinese food night, pizza night. She loved cheesesteaks and pasta. The only home-cooked meals she ate were made by her mom, who cooked traditional African-American foods. Mac and cheese, collard greens, fried chicken and fish. As she said, obesity runs in her family. She did try dieting, but she says it was always half-hearted.
It'll be a week or 2 weeks, you know, I'll do Atkins or South Beach or whatever, and then it just all felt too restrictive, and so I swung way over to the other side, right. And I didn't really exercise at all.
And what prompted you to get the surgery? What put you over the edge?
You know, I've thought about that a lot, and honestly, I can say it was when obesity became uncomfortable to live with. Because I come from a family where weight has always been an issue for so many people in my family, I was never raised with the assumption that, you know, I was anything less than an adored daughter. Nobody, you know, commented on my appearance. I didn't have those sorts of things growing up that I hear other people say, you know, their mother was always nagging them to lose weight and things like that. Being a bigger person was sort of the norm within my family. There was a point in time after I had had my second daughter, though, that, you know, my body just began to hurt and I had these two small children. I couldn't really keep up with them. And, you know, I'd take them to the playground and I would sit on the bench the whole time and not really play with them. And that sort of bothered me. And that's when I decided that I wanted to start losing weight. And at the time, I don't mind sharing, at the time that I was about 340 pounds.
Nikki had gastric bypass, which is one type of weight loss surgery. Doctors sectioned off a part of her stomach, so only one part of it receives food. That part's like about the size of a goose egg. Then the doctors connected the bottom of her stomach to a spot in her intestines that's farther down the digestive tract. In other words, they bypass part of the process, so Nikki absorbs fewer calories from the food she eats. Thing is, once they shorten your digestive system like that, there are certain foods your body just can't handle anymore, often fat and sugar and carbs. You know, the good stuff, the stuff you crave the most. Those foods you love can make you sick. But that's what Nikki wanted.
I was actually really in earnest hoping that, you know, things like pizza and cookies and ice cream really, really made me violently ill, because I felt like if I could just get some reprieve from cravings and things like that, because I knew that if I had that negative reaction slowly, my behavior would begin to change.
So in the years since the surgery, like, can you sort of give me a sense of sort of like what have been the biggest challenges? What were the ups and downs of dealing with that?
I didn't realize how mentally dependent I was on food. And so my inability to eat had a really, really traumatic psychological effect on me.
What were you dependent on food for?
Just emotionally. It's, you know, I had just sort of ups and downs throughout my life and throughout my childhood and things like that, that I just coped with food. You know, I would celebrate with food. If I was depressed, I would eat. If I was bored, I would eat. So it's like, you know, I had taught myself somewhere along the way to just sort of affirm almost any emotion by eating. And so it was like, I wasn't quite sure what to do with myself if I wasn't eating. So far as like logistically, everything made me sick in the beginning. There was about maybe 6 or 7 foods after surgery that did not consistently make me ill. And so as a result of that, you know, I sort of had a bunch of food phobias. But then two is that I developed sort of a little bit of an obsession with food. You hear a lot in our community that people start like obsessively watching Food Network and things like that, because that was the relationship I could have with food, is, you know, watching cooking shows and watching people prepare food and things like that. I took it sort of a step further, because I just really didn't know how to cope at all. So I actually would do things like go to the grocery store for absolutely no reason. I wouldn't buy anything. I'd just go look at the food and leave.
Did that make you feel better?
Yes. It was almost like I could think and breathe when I was there, whereas it's like at any other time, it's really hard to explain, but like when you know, I was out and about in my life at my job or whatever, it was like food was just sort of on my mind all the time, but I wasn't able to eat it. So it was in my normal everyday life, you know, I'd be thinking food, 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 food. More specifically, I would be anxiously waiting for the next time that I felt like I was able to eat food. So it's like, when am I going to be hungry again?
But it almost sounds like the equivalent of going through a really bad breakup.
Yes. Yes. That is exactly what it's like. It's like, yeah, you want it, but then you don't want it. But then you know, if you have it, you have a bad reaction. It's like, do I miss you? Do I not miss you? You know, call me sometime, but you really hurt me.
Like, right. And then when you go to the grocery store and don't buy anything, it's like you're parking outside the person's house looking in the window.
It's completely crazy. It's like, even when I was in the midst of it, I was just like, oh my goodness. I guess the good part about it is that that's part of how I learned about food, because I was, you know, I didn't want to look like a suspicious person just wandering through a grocery store. So I'd stop, I'd read labels on things and get to know where things were in the grocery store. But yeah, it was a space where I felt like I could breathe and think normal thoughts, because I was around food.
Nikki had her surgery in 2008. She lost 150 pounds in the first 9 months. And 8 years later, she's kept off almost all that weight. Later in the show, we'll hear more of her story, including how changing her diet affected her relationship with her kids. But first, we're really interested in what she had said about how she coped after her surgery, watching Food Network, walking around the grocery store. And we were curious, like, is this common?
It is common after surgery, at least right after surgery, to have the feeling like, what did I get myself into?
This is Dr. Jenna Heimowitz from Stony Brook University. She's a psychologist who works with patients who undergo weight loss surgery.
Most individuals experience some emotional side effects. Sometimes you do have that feeling of loss or feeling almost grief, an experience of grief over food. Some patients might experience some anxiety related to eating. Maybe it's anxiety about like regaining weight after surgery. And then sometimes there's anxiety related to like body image. And so not really being happy with body shape after surgery.
Oh, so they have a certain expectation of what they're going to look like, and when that doesn't materialize.
Exactly. Usually it is temporary, and that once those patients start really re-engaging in life, these symptoms subside. But for a smaller percentage of individuals, anxiety about weight and shape and some related depression might persist.
I was especially interested to hear Nikki talk about watching Food Network as a way to cope. Is that something you hear often, and what can you tell me about what's happening there?
So don't hear it all that often, but it does occur. And what might be happening there, you know, if you're telling yourself like, oh, I can't eat that, you shouldn't think about food, like the more you almost want to think about food
right.
and eating.
From your perspective, what are some of the biggest challenges when you have someone post-surgery? Like, what are some of the roadblocks you run into?
There are a lot of techniques that I could use to help, you know, patients cope with some of the difficulties that they experience after surgery. But a lot of patients are reluctant to reach out to a psychologist or other mental health professional because of the stigma related to, you know, seeing a therapist. Because a lot of, you know, society still has the perception that seeing a therapist means, if you see a therapist, it means that you're crazy.
Coming up, more with Nikki in Baltimore. She'll talk about feeling guilty when she sees her kids struggle with their weight.
There was a time where I was like, did I wreck my kids?
Plus, we'll decide whether zucchini lasagna is actually lasagna. Stick around. Welcome back to The Sporkful from WNYC Studios. I'm Dan Pashman. Like I said, when you have gastric bypass, your body can't digest certain foods anymore. Nikki says after the surgery, she learned pretty fast which foods those were for her. A lot of the traditional African-American foods that she grew up eating, she can't eat anymore. The food she cooks at home now is more like, well, more like zucchini lasagna. She has two daughters who are 17 and 14, and I asked her how it feels that she can't share her family's food culture with them.
You know, with my oldest daughter in particular, it's a little bit hard. Like when we went to grandma's house or we went to somebody else's house and she would just like happily eat those foods, I got like some jealousy there. I was kind of jealous because I was like, these people are making these foods that my child really, really loves. And then she comes home and I make something for her and it's just sort of this flat face that she gets like, oh, you made that.
Right.
So yeah, I will admit that there is, even to this day, a bit of jealousy involved when I see her go to family members' houses, that it's just like it's almost like she's been like sort of saved, like, you know, from being a refugee or something like that. She's like, oh, thank God, food I can eat. And it's like, you know, she's not trying to be hurtful, but you know, this is the food that she likes and that's not how I cook it.
Right. I know you've mentioned that your kids seem to sort of have the same gene that runs in your family in terms
yes.
of their weight. How are you dealing with that?
When I was a kid, you know, people would say, oh, you're so pretty. If you would just lose a little bit of weight, you'd be so much prettier. You know, I don't do those sorts of statements with my kids, and I don't do the sort of, you know, you could do this or you could do that if you lost some weight. So I try to be very open with them. I try to talk to them about their choices, about making trade-offs. I try to encourage them not to, you know, you can't have, you know, multiple sodas a day. You can't have multiple desserts a day. And my biggest thing is that I try to present eating as being linked to their weight, as being linked to their overall health, and not anything about their character.
Right. It's got to be hard as a parent. You know, like, we all hope that our kids will inherit, like, our best genes.
Yes.
You know, like, we want our kids to be, like, smart in the way that we're smart without being dumb in the ways that we're dumb, you know, and
yes.
our most attractive features without our least attractive features. But, of course, it never pans out that way. It's always going to be a mixed bag.
Yeah.
And I think it's always a little hard as a parent when you see, like, when you see one of your genes that you don't love so much being manifested in your kids. I mean, on one hand, you're powerless, obviously, to do anything about it. But on the other hand, you kind of feel like it's your fault, you know?
Yeah. And I've struggled with that a lot. It's like, you know, I felt like sort of I passed something on to them, and I felt like, you know, how much were these first years when I wasn't very active? You know, I didn't have them in things like soccer or t-ball or, you know, or anything like that. And so, you know, they aren't naturally the kids who want to be in sports and things like that. And so, you know, there was a time where I was like, did I wreck my kids? And I've come to the conclusion that we have some work to do with regards to weight and health. However, there are so many great parts of who they are that will get them to the point where they are healthier. So I have good feelings about their future.
So now that you know more about Nikki, maybe you'll be able to understand why the question she originally wrote in with is such a big deal for her. Since she had her surgery, she makes lasagna with zucchini instead of pasta because she can't eat carbs. And she says she lives in a house divided. On one side, there's her boyfriend and her 17-year-old. They say zucchini lasagna is not lasagna. They also say they don't like it very much. Her younger daughter, the 14-year-old, she's on Team Nikki. She says it is lasagna and it is delicious. But before I could take sides, I needed a little more info. Is it more important to you that your older daughter like this dish that you cook, whatever they end up calling it, or that they agree that it should be called lasagna?
Oh, that's a good question. I think that for me, it's more important that they agree that it be called lasagna, because I don't think I'm going to change their mind. But when they made that statement, it was almost like, this is not legit lasagna, and we don't, you know, we're not going to respect it as such. And I'm like, you know, I want my lasagna, the way I make it for myself, you know, to have every bit as much respect as if I made it with noodles. It's, you know, it's lasagna.
Right. Well, here's what I'm thinking, Nikki, because the word lasagna refers to a specific shape of pasta.
Yes.
It refers to that, the flat pasta that we put into lasagna. The word lasagna also means a dish that typically has lasagna pasta inside it.
Yes.
As much as I want to say that you're right.
Yeah.
You know, if we say that that's lasagna when you put zucchini instead of the pasta, then almost any layered food could be a lasagna.
Oh, that's true.
But if you want me to help you with your argument, Nikki.
Please do.
I really want you to be right in this debate.
I really want to be right, too.
I think you have earned it, Nikki. I think you have earned being right in this debate.
I have thought about this so much.
That's right. So that's why I want to arm you to win this debate with your daughter, come hell or high water.
Yes.
Look at mac and cheese. Mm-hmm. I think that many people call something mac and cheese even when it's made with a different pasta besides macaroni, mm-hmm. right? You could say to your older daughter, if you make mac and cheese with cavatappi or with ziti or with any one of many other pasta shapes, are you not going to call it mac and cheese?
That's very true.
You know, it's still a pasta, though. If I handed you a plate of chopped up zucchini with cheese sauce mm-hmm. and said, here's some mac and cheese.
Well, you know, the interesting part about that argument is that I also make a low-carb substitute for mac and cheese. I make mashed cauliflower and cheese, which she actually likes very much. And she'll call it cauliflower mac and cheese.
Oh.
So it's like, so yeah, that does strengthen my argument a little bit. If this can be cauliflower mac and cheese, why can't this be zucchini lasagna?
I think that in the long run, whether or not your daughter agrees, I am optimistic that she's learning a lot of really valuable lessons from you that will benefit her in much more important ways than defining lasagna in the long term in her life. So,
yes, I agree.
So thank you so much for calling, and best of luck with your zucchini lasagna. It sounds delicious. Can you send me? Will you send us the recipe? Can we post the recipe online?
Sure.
Okay.
I'd be glad to.
All right, Nikki in Baltimore, thanks so much for your call. Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
That's Nikki in Baltimore. She shares a lot of her recipes and her experiences on her blog. It's called Bariatric Foodie. Check it out at bariatricfoodie.com. We'll also link to her zucchini lasagna recipe on our website. Remember, it's Podcast Appreciation Month. You want those 3 top secret Classics Porkful episodes? Donate any amount, support us, and you'll get all three of them. Give $5 a month and you get the WNYC lunch tote too. Go to sporkful.com/donate or text spork to 69866. Thanks. This show is a production of WNYC Studios and The Sporkful. It's produced by Ann Sani and me. Editing help from Shoshana Gold. Engineering help from Bill O'Neill and Irene Trudell. Music help from Black Label Music. Special thanks to Paula Schumann. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.
And I'm Alyssa from Jupiter, Florida.
And I'm Jordan Waltman, living in Budapest, Hungary.
And I'm Julianne Guzman in New York, New York, reminding you to eat more,
eat better,
and eat more better.